This morning, what I have to share with you is kind of a product of what I've been thinking about this week, off and on, and a reflection of some of the studying I've done, and I would like for it to maybe turn on some light bulbs for you and cause you to your thinking to be energized and motivated, and help us to have a better understanding, because that's what we're here for. Is we want to have a better understanding of the Scripture. We want to have a better understanding of God's expectations for us. So, the subject I want us to consider this morning is a Pharisee. And I know that all of us have heard that term, and I would like to read you a definition I found. So a Pharisee is a member of an ancient Jewish sect, distinguished by strict observance of the traditional and written law, and commonly held to have pretensions to superior sanctity. All right. So the Pharisees is someone that I personally have always kind of considered them kind of unreasonable people that had expectations for people that were not realistic. I know we read in the Scripture about the Pharisees. Jesus even said you can do as they say, but don't do as they do. About them binding grievous burdens on people and things that were unnecessary. We read about that in the Scripture. So, been doing some, trying to do some study on who the Pharisees were. And I think it would be good for us today if we had a better understanding of who they were and what they represented. So, to start out with, the Pharisees came into existence. They weren't a part of the original Old Testament Hebrew nation, okay? It's kind of a way of thinking that developed. It was a direction that a group of people took in what is termed the intertestamental period. That means between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And we know that from the time of the last book of the Old Bible being written until Jesus came and the New Testament dispensation is approximately 400 years. So, one statement that I found was that the intertestamental Judaism was far from monotheic or monolithic in as a whole. In other words, they did not have this common view of God and of the Scripture. There were some commonalities. They believed in one God. They believed in the Torah or the written law that Moses was given, the Old Testament, or the Ten Commandments that was given to Moses on the tables of stone. So they had some different views, and they got misled and misdirected because there was not a real clear vision of God's expectations for them during that period of time. Remember, they had went into captivity, they had come out of captivity, the nation of the the Hebrew people or the Israelite nation had been divided. Half of them had been carried off into foreign lands, the Israelites from the kingdom of Israel. And they'd been carried off, and the people that carried them off brought other people back in and filled up the land with them, and they became Samaritans that Jesus knew when Jesus came. And the Jews that were around Jerusalem got carried off to Babylon. That's where Daniel and Ezekiel and those were carried off into captivity. They came back under Nehemiah and Ezra, rebuilt the temple. And but there were a lot of confusion. And after the prophets were not there to really keep, the people wouldn't listen to the prophets. And so there was just, as Proverbs says, where there is no vision, the people perish. So the people didn't have a clear vision of what God's expectations were of them. They didn't know why they did what they did. Some of them didn't. They were just confusion. So during this time between what we know as the Old Testament and the New Testament, there was different factions that developed. So the Pharisees felt that this is an important point. And maybe I'll talk about the others. There was three different sects of people that would have considered themselves followers of Judaism when Christ came to this world. One of them were the Sadducees, and the Sadducees, we know that from reading the scripture, the Sadducees were very legalistic. They were aristocratic. They focused mostly on priestly obligations, and they were aloof. The Sadducees went by the written Torah, and that was it. If it didn't say it in the black and white, it wasn't there. And they didn't believe in a resurrection. They didn't believe that there was any... There was a lot of things they didn't accept. Because they were so connected with temple worship, most of the priests, not all of them, but most of the priests that were functioning at the time that Christ came were of the Sadducees. That was my reference. Okay? So the priestly duties and the things of the routines of priests went through in the temple, that was the most important, or almost the only thing that mattered to them. And the spoken Torah or the oral Torah, what the Pharisees felt like God told Moses and how to implement the old law, they totally discarded. They wouldn't accept it at all. Alright? So consequently, when the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, when Jerusalem was completely destroyed, the Sadducees as a sect have disappeared. We don't have Sadducees now, or didn't in the 100 AD. They just kind of disappeared because everything they did was connected with the physical temple. And if they couldn't function, if the temple wasn't there, they didn't function, and they just kind of disintegrated and fell apart. And there was another sect of the, or a faction of the, those that followed Judaism called, I'm probably not going to say this right, somebody help me. ESS? Essenes? I don't know. I struggled with this and knowing how to pronounce it. But anyway, ESS, ENES. This faction emerged basically out of disgust for the other two. They didn't like what either the Pharisees or the Sadducees were doing. They didn't like, and they kind of left Jerusalem, and they did some things that you and I would not accept either. They believed that the others had corrupted the holy city. They believed that they corrupted the temple, and they believed that they just moved outside of Jerusalem, and they lived kind of in a monastery type environment. They adopted very strict regulations about what they would eat and the lifestyle they would live. And one of the things that makes them important is they apparently had a library of scrolls hid in jars or something in a cave, and they were undisturbed from somewhere before Christ's time until about 1947. So if you ever hear about the Dead Sea Scrolls that have supported validated the scripture that we have today, because it goes all the way back to those times, they're responsible for that. So that's why they're important for our discussion today. But I'd like to go back to talking about the Pharisees, because that's what I think that we have to understand what Jesus was addressing many times in the scripture, and many times what the Apostle Paul was, where he was coming from. It's important that we understand what a Pharisee was and who they were. So the Pharisees felt that the written Torah, the written law that Moses had recorded, was important, but that the oral or the verbal Torah that God, they felt like God instructed Moses in how to implement and to interpret the written law, was equally important with what was written, the spoken word. But you know, most of you young people have played a game called gossip, right? And you know how it is when you put people in a big circle, and one of you whispers to the one sitting next to you, and it goes all the way around the room, and you just whisper from one ear to the next, and you don't speak out loud. You go all the way around, and when it gets back to where it started, it don't sound like it started out. So they put equal importance with the spoken interpolation, if we can use that here, of the written word. Okay? And they felt like that spoken word from the Lord gave Moses the knowledge of what these laws meant and how they were to be applied. This oral tradition was codified and written down roughly 3 centuries later in what is known as the Talmud. Okay? All right, this is a Jewish document. The Pharisees believed in an afterlife. They believed that we had a soul that went on to either reward or consequence by the life that we lived. They also believed that there was going to be a Messiah that would come that would herald an era of world peace. Literal world peace. That's what they believed. The Pharisees were not of the aristocratic segment of society like the Sadducees were. The Sadducees knew that they were better than everybody else because they came from a higher caste system. But the Pharisees were more like blue-collar people, what we would call blue-collar people. They really developed the worship system after the temple was destroyed, in such things as individual prayer and assembly and synagogue. So today, the people that would consider themselves a follower of Judaism are descendants of the Pharisees, of that sect of the Pharisees. All right? Now, when we begin to think about the impact that the Pharisees had and what they stood for, one of the things I want us to keep in mind is how they felt like that the what Moses understood God to say, how he was to apply the law, was of equal importance to what was actually recorded in stone. And as time went on, of course, it's just like playing the game gossip. Things can kind of get changed a little bit. And one of the things that the Pharisees excelled at was implementing restrictions to keep someone from even coming close to violating what the law said. All right? So this is why they had all of their things that they felt so strongly about, such as washing before you ate. You remember how the Pharisees had conflict with Jesus and his disciples? They were eating with unwashed hands. It was a ceremony that they had to go through, and it was a violation, they felt like, of any level of integrity with God because they didn't wash their hands before they ate. We're not talking about partaking of spiritual food, but it was literal food there. They felt very strongly about keeping the Sabbath. And if somebody, how many times did Jesus run into conflict with the Pharisees because he performed a miracle on the Sabbath day? And it was considered work. And they felt like, you know, he shouldn't perform that kind of work on the Sabbath. And they were trying to protect and honor the Sabbath. So they had a lot of oral tradition and law, spoken things that they put equal to the written law, what the law actually said. So I'd like for us to turn now to Acts, the 26th chapter, and I'd like for us to notice something here. Beginning in verse 1, it says, "Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Thou art permitted to speak for thyself. Then Paul stretched forth his hand and answered for himself. I think myself happy, King Agrippa, because I shall answer for myself this day before thee touching all the things whereof I'm accused of the Jews, especially because I know thee to be an expert in all customs and questions among which are among the Jews. Wherefore I beseech thee to hear me patiently." All right? So first off, I want us to understand that this King Agrippa was most likely known in history as Herod the Third. All right? Herod the Great was the man that issued the decree to go out and kill all the little children, little boys 2 years and younger, in around Bethlehem to try to get Jesus. Okay? So this was most likely a grandson to that man. Herod the Great's ancestry was Edomites. And his ancestry, when they came under, they were, the region around there was conquered by a group of people that came came to be known as the Hasmoneans. All right? And they told everybody, you either convert to Judaism or get out. It was convert or else. All right? So Herod's ancestry, his father and all, they converted to Judaism and stayed. And so they, in some of them, by the time this man came along, there was, had been intermarriage with Jews. And so he had some Jewish lineage in him, but was not necessarily 100% Jew. But they were very familiar with Jewish culture, and they were very familiar with these different sects of Judaism. He knew about it. And when Paul was speaking to him, he said, "Thou art permitted to speak for thyself." Then Paul stretched forth his hand, like maybe you would see a statue of somebody with their hand out like this. And they're speaking, they're addressing the crowd. And it means that he stretched forth his hand to get the attention of those that might be in the audience. And I know someone has made the comment about myself, said that if you tied his hands behind his back, he couldn't talk. So anyway, some of us are more demonstrative about waving our hands around, but Paul, he stretched his hand out because he was trying to make sure people were paying attention and they were listening, and he had the king's attention. And he said, "I think myself happy, King Agrippa, because I shall answer for myself." He was thankful for the opportunity to be able to explain where he was coming from. All right? So, in the third verse he says, "Especially because I know thee to be an expert in all customs and questions which are among the Jews, wherefore I beseech thee to hear me patiently." He knew that this King Agrippa that he was standing before, this king was a subordinate to the Roman Empire. Okay, I'll make sure everybody knows that. He was king over the Jews, appointed by the Roman Empire, and his authority only was come under that. He wasn't of the lineage of David or anything like that. So he was, you might say, a foreigner, but he was the supreme ruler there, but any authority he had really came from the Roman authority. Alright? So his family, this is at least the third generation of his family being the ruler there, and they knew, he was familiar with all of this. He was familiar with the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the Essens, or however you say the other sect, I'm not sure what they are, but in any other factions, he was familiar with all that. So in the fourth verse, Paul says, "My manner of life from my youth, which was at the first among mine own nation at Jerusalem, know all the Jews." Everybody knows, this is not a foreign land to me. I grew up here. We have some of you here that have lived in this location, maybe this neighborhood, almost all of your life. I don't live where I went to school. I don't live next door to my high school classmates or anything like that. Some of you do. And he said, that's the way Paul was. He said, this is where I've been. Everybody knows me. He says, there were those here which knew me from the beginning, if they would testify that after the most straitest sect of our religion, I lived a Pharisee. So Paul says, not only did I live here, this is my stomping grounds, if you would mind me saying. He said, I was raised and taught and lived after the most straitest of our sects. Okay? I was raised a Pharisee. I lived a Pharisee. I was the epitome, if you will, of what a Pharisee is. I not only accepted the written word of Moses, But I accepted all of the oral Torah too. I accepted what my immediate forefathers told me was important to do. I lived it. That's the way I conducted myself. If they told me that I should do nothing but read and study the Scripture and pray all Sabbath day long, then that's what I did. I didn't go down, I didn't go out and, today we might say I wouldn't go out and cut my grass, I wouldn't do this, I wouldn't do that. Whatever it was, I followed the regulations. I washed my hands before I ate, and then I washed my hands before I did that. I done all of those things. I was very careful. He was supportive of the other Pharisees and religious leaders when they were stoning Stephen, weren't they? He was standing there holding the cloak of those that threw the stones. All right? He says, "And now I stand and am judged for the hope of the promise made of God unto our fathers." So Paul knew the Scripture, didn't he? He knew what the Old Testament prophets said. He knew all of that. And the point I want us to get a hold of today, or this morning, is that Paul was, I know I've said in the past that Paul was an educated man and all of that, but the Pharisees enjoyed, you might say, a real broad level of acceptance and amongst the nominal people, the average person. And even though that most or the majority of the priests were Sadducees, because the Pharisees represented so much of the people at large, many times the Sadducees in the Sanhedrin, which was a council that came together, they would listen to what the Pharisees had to say because they had a lot. They represented a great majority of the people. All right. So, now I'd like for us to go and look at an example of how the Pharisees operated. I'd like for us to go to Luke, the 7th chapter. And I want to begin reading in the 39th verse, I believe, maybe up above that, maybe in verse 36. "And one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with them, and he went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to meat." So the Pharisees were more of the blue collar, the common person. But remember what they believed. They believed not only in accepting the written law that God had given Moses, but also this oral Torah, this spoken word that they felt like was God's instruction of how to apply the law. And they had inherently enhanced upon that as time went on. Okay? So here, one of the Pharisees, one of that group, and had desired that Jesus would come and eat with him. So he did. 37th verse says, "And behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment, and stood at his feet behind him weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee which had bidden him saw it, he spoke within himself, saying..." So this Pharisee, it wasn't... He didn't have to go and ask somebody if they thought what Jesus was doing was right, okay? This was something that was ingrained in his mentality. Right? I'm trying to help us get a picture of how the Pharisees operated. This was ingrained in his mentality that you don't let a sinner touch you. Okay? All right? Don't we want to be clean? Don't we want to be acceptable before the Lord in our spirits? But I don't want sin to be named among us. All right? Yeah. That's what the Scripture teaches us, right? But the Pharisees took this to the point that they didn't want anybody that had sin in their life to touch them, physically touch them. Okay? So immediately this Pharisee was thinking in his head, now if Jesus, he 39th verse, now when the Pharisee which had bidden him saw it, he spake within himself saying, it was in there. He didn't have to go and check with somebody. It was in his head. This is the way he was programmed, you might say. Saying, this man, if he were a prophet, if he was really sincere, if he was really doing what he ought to do and operating under the guidelines he ought to operate in, he ought to know. This woman's a sinner. She's got a reputation in this place. He would have known who and what manner of woman this is that touched him, for she's a sinner. And Jesus answering said unto him, Simon, I have somewhat to say to thee. And he said, Master, say on. He was saying, I recognize you as a teacher, but you know, there's some real questions. Have you ever sat in a class and the teacher said something you thought, now that's really going out on a limb? I'm not talking about in Sunday school, all right? I'm talking about in college or high school. You ever been there? I'm going to tell you one real quick so you'll know how it feels. I was in a class one time and we were talking about some of the principles. It was probably kind of a introduction into physics, all right? And we got to talking about how wind and water currents and stuff like that impacted the ability of like a ship or an airplane in its traveling. So we were talking about how that if a boat could travel 30 miles an hour in still water and it was going upstream in a river that was flowing, it was going against the current and the river was flowing 3 miles an hour, then relative to the ground, how fast was the boat going? Well, the answer is 27 miles an hour. Probably other factors involved in there, but, you know, it's 30 minus 3 is 27. And if an airplane is flying through the air and it can fly on with no tailwind, it can fly 150 miles an hour and it has a 40 mile an hour tailwind, how fast is it going in relative to the ground? Well, it's 190 miles an hour. And then she said, and if you're riding your bicycle and you're going 15 miles an hour on the speedometer and you had a 5 mile an hour wind pushing on your back, how fast would you be going? And she said, well, obviously you'd be going 20 miles an hour. And I said, woo, hold on just a minute. So anyway, we got into discussion because I knew what she was saying wasn't right. Okay? And this Pharisee thought, sure, that even though he respected Jesus as a master or a teacher, he thought, you're not doing something right here. Okay? Because this was ingrained in the way they viewed everything. This woman's a sinner. She's got sin in her life. So you don't let her physically touch you. How are we going to reach the world around us with the gospel message if we're unwilling to touch someone? Okay? We can't do that. But that's the way I want us to understand when Jesus came into this world, one of the factions of Judaism, of the Jews, in their Judaism meaning the religious component of the Jews that he came to minister to, because what did he tell us? He came to to do what? The lost. But it was, he came for the lost house of Israel, didn't he? He came to share the gospel message with the Jews. So, as he came in to that, and he was, one of the things he contended with was the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were people that, if you were going to be righteous in the Pharisees' eyes, you don't touch a sinner. And you don't let them touch you. That's just part of the spoken law. You want to be careful to keep sin out of your life. You know, somebody comes to me and we're talking about gaining victory in a specific area of their life that maybe they feel that they have fell and succumbed to temptations that the devil has presented to them. You know, one of the counsels I will give to them is you need to adjust your environment a little bit. You know, if every time you get close to a particular environment, you're tempted to, let's just say that someone is tempted to use inappropriate language, take the name of the Lord in vain, and to use other words that we would classify as curse words. And maybe they realize that every time they go fishing with their buddies that use that kind of terminology that are not saved, they realize that they are tempted and they're pressed and they feel like they fail in some area or another. You know, one of my advices would be, is be very careful about going fishing with your buddies. Doesn't mean you can't go fishing with somebody else, but be careful about associating and spending a lot of time with people that impact you to do the wrong thing. But here they said, they took that a little bit further, and they said, don't even talk to somebody that has a habit of using bad language. So if somebody comes in their presence that they know has a possibility of using language that would be to them unacceptable, they just shut them. They don't talk to them. Well, we can't do that today. But I'm trying to get us to understand how a Pharisee operated. All right? A Pharisee looked on a situation and this tradition or this oral law that they had, they took extreme measures to safeguard themselves to the point that they isolated themselves from someone that could really be benefited from knowing God. All right? So let's go to another one. In Luke, the 18th chapter, and notice here, the 9th verse, this is a parable, you're all familiar with this. And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Now with what we've said so far, who would you think he's talking to? At least the Pharisees and maybe the publicans too. But he said he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that were righteous and despised others. Can you see how if you live, Paul, when he was talking to King Agrippa, he said, there's people around here, you know how I've lived. You know how I was raised after the strictest sect of Judaism. I put that word in there. I lived a Pharisee. I was careful. I crossed all my T's. I dotted all of my I's. I was an example of a Pharisee. I was a Pharisee of Pharisees, he says in a place. Okay? So he said he spake this parable to those that trusted in themselves. They were confident in their ability to safeguard themselves from unrighteous behavior. Two men, this is the parable, two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a publican. And the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are. Wouldn't that, if you've done something over and over and over again, doesn't that build your confidence? And if you know that you're following the rules, have you ever been in a situation where something didn't turn out right and you know that you did exactly what the protocol was, right, what the book said, all of that? You ever been there? I have. I've been there. I've been there in class, in school. I knew I followed the rules. I knew I followed the guidelines, and I got a different answer than somebody else did. And what is our, I don't know. I'll just tell you what my characteristic is. When I feel like that I have followed the rules, and I've been careful to follow the rules, and somebody says, "Nope, that's the wrong answer." You know what I'm prone to do? You're going to have to show it to me, because I think I'm right. All right? And I'd venture to say there's others here like that this morning. You follow the rules, you're going to come down to the end, somebody says, "Oh, no, that's not right." You're going to have to say, "Look, I followed the rules. I done it by the book. Now you got to show me where how I got the wrong answer. Let's go through this step by step." I've been there too. But he says here, "These two men went up, and this Pharisee stood up, and he prayed with himself, God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice a week, I give tithes of all that I possess, and the publican standing afar off would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven." So this man, this Pharisee, he said, I follow the book. I do all of the right things. I'm not an extortioner. I'm not unjust. I'm not an adulterer. I'm not even like this publican over here. I fast twice in a week. I give tithes of all I possess. You can check my book. You know, you can open it up and turn whatever page you want to open it up to, and it all adds up. That's what the Pharisee said. And the publican, he wouldn't even lift up his eyes. And he said, he smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down, the publican, went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. So I'm more interested this morning in us understanding how the Pharisee was. This Pharisee felt very confident in himself, and he put equal importance to him safeguarding himself from deviating from the law as he did from the law itself. Do we see that this morning? Are you getting the drift of what I'm trying to say? This Pharisee was meticulous in his life, but he was the reason he didn't go down to his house justified. The reason he wasn't clear before the Lord was because he was trusting in all of his safeguard measures rather than humbling his heart before the Lord. Okay? That's the reason it wasn't because he done wrong things. It was because he didn't recognize his personal need of God. All right? And the publican, on the other hand, was a man that said, Lord, have mercy on me. I'm a human. And whatever he did right or wrong, whatever he thought he done right or wrong, he wasn't trusting in that. Okay? So I'm trying to get us this morning to be familiar and introduced to what it meant to be a publican and what it meant to think like a publican. A Pharisee. Excuse me. I want us to know what it was like. Can you imagine living in a society where a large number of people had all of these safeguards in place in their life? You know, I would like for people to come into the area that I live in and feel out of place when they wanted to pursue some kind of ungodly behavior. Wouldn't it be nice? I'm just going to use Web City for an illustration because that's where we're at this morning. But wouldn't it be nice if somebody come in from out of state and they maybe pulled into the convenience store? You know, I know what one of these convenience stores over here says up over the door. But wouldn't it be nice if people came in and went into the convenience store and the only thing that was available was some snacks and maybe some soft drinks and the other stuff, and there was no alcohol and there was no tobacco products in there, and maybe they'd go up to the cashier and say, "Well, where's the beer?" And they say, "Oh, we don't sell beer here." And then they go across the street to Casey's and nothing in there, and they, "Well, where's the beer at?" "Well, we don't sell beer here." And you know, everywhere they went in town they couldn't find it, and then they leave. Boy, wouldn't you like people to feel conspicuous if they were trying? I would love for that. I'd like to live in an environment. I think I would. I'd like to live in an environment that people that wanted to do things that were unrighteous would feel conspicuous. Like, what? Feel kind of strange around here. It'd be different, wouldn't it? Because we feel kind of strange. We go in and it's like, well, there's no other place to buy gas. I hope nobody knows that I'm not stopping here because it says coldest beer in town over the door. I'd rather for the other people to feel conspicuous. Well, Jesus came into an environment where there was a large number of common people that had it in their mind that they were doing what God wanted them to do by having all of this safeguards in place. All right? I don't know how effective I'm being this morning, but I want you to get the idea that the Pharisees done a lot of things that was right. All right, and they took doing things right to an extreme. All right, they were a group of people that didn't tolerate misconduct. All right, but they also twisted some things around and put burdens on people that were not scripturally based, okay? But I want to leave you here because I want to tell you something tonight, Lord willing, that'll hinge on this. But I want us to leave this morning with the thought, with the realization that the Pharisees were a good portion. They weren't just an oddball group here and there. Because everywhere the apostles went, everywhere that Jesus went, he encountered Pharisees. Okay? Just like we encounter commonalities in our culture. And they came in contact with these Pharisees, and they did a lot of things that was right. Okay, I want us to not forget that. today. All right? At least today. So I'm going to quit for this morning. I'd like to invite you to come back tonight. You pray for me.